free ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Okay, hello everyone and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This is going to be an interesting one. It's just me here recording. No Andrew, unfortunately. No Andrew Canyon. Oh, did I ever introduce myself? I don't think I introduced myself. Joseph Kaur, Stats Perform Media. It's just me recording early on Thursday morning, actually, just after the Wildcat Brisbane game in Brisbane. So I've got thoughts on that one, which we normally don't do. But other than that, we're going to be talking about a bunch of things. The Melbourne-Perth matchup, now we're going to be talking about some of the fallout from that. I thought that was a pretty interesting game, and obviously those two are going to be in the grand final. I think that's pretty safe to say, so some thoughts on that. We've got a question from Mason, the host of the Cool Cats Corner. We're going to get to that. That's about LaMelo Ball. Adam Ford, a bit of intel on that, I suppose. Import guards, and then Lego Masters, kind of, and Kwame Brown. If you've seen that stuff, I know it's not directly related to the NBL, but we're going to go for it anyway. Firstly, rate and review the show. There were some very, very kind reviews left in the week. They really, they're very positive. Really appreciate them. So thank you to those who wrote them. If you're listening for the first time, subscribe. Why not? I have one copy of Marvelous left. I'm going to reach and grab it and play with its pages. 2 moments. There it is there. One left. You can hear the pages. After that is sold, it is gone. It's 30 quid from the link below. Once it's gone, it's gone. I wasn't going to sell it. I was actually going to give it as a gift, but because so many sold quickly, I literally have one left. I know I've sort of spruiked that, oh, there's three left when there's really four. And I guarantee you right now, this is the last one. The second last was bought by someone at Tasmania, and this is the last one. Marvelous. It's about Brett Maher. It's a handbook on the league. It's about 400 pages. It's a big, thick book. There is no other handbook on the league that tells it as well. Body Nodge has been on the show before, friend of the show, the host of the Brad and Body podcast. He's been there from the first jump ball till now. It's a very brilliant book. And if you don't get it, you'll have to buy one secondhand, which you can still do, but it'll probably cost you about twice as much for a copy that's got a slice of ham in between each page. I don't know. Anyway, that's that. Let's get into some topics. While I'm bringing up my topics, follow me on Twitter, at NBL Pocket Pod. Get engaged, why not? If you got topics for me, let's start with what I've got at the top here. Let's go with the Perth-Brisbane game. So that was an interesting one. Kevin White missed the three-point attempt, air ball, to be honest. Are we calling it a choke? Is it a choke in the same way that Jesse Wagstaff's was a choke? Gee, to airball in that situation. I wonder if someone got a hand to it. I couldn't quite see. The commentators obviously weren't there. They couldn't quite see. Nobody airballs a shot like that, surely. I think he got blocked a little bit. But gee, he was in a ton of space. Maybe I'm being too nice to Kevin White, but he shouldn't have been in that position. This was a mistake from Trevor Gleeson, I thought. Not so much that play. That play was simple. The play before it, where Lamar Patterson, Bester was on him, Jared Bester, and Patterson was allowed to just shake and bake him and shed him like it was nothing and got to the exact play he wanted. That's no criticism of Bester. I just think you got to send a double team there. I think on the floor for Brisbane, they were all shooters, I will admit. I think it was Sobey, Patterson, Drimmick. I don't know who you would have come off, but I just wouldn't have let Patterson do that. As much as he's had a bad season, I still feel like he'd want to take it out of his hands and test a guy like, well, anyone other than Sobey, really. Test a Kadee, who just missed a wide open three the play before. Test a Drimmick in that situation. Probably Drimmick's the guy you test. Kadee was hitting some big shots in that game. So come off a Drimmick and test him. Don't let Lamar Patterson do that to one of your guys. It's not like you had a stud defender on him. Were you comfortable guarding him one-on-one? I thought that was a real mistake. And then going to the Kevin White play, Brisbane showed that if you're willing to cynically double-team and triple-team Bryce Cotton every time he catches the ball, even in the backcourt and at quarter court, you're going to force the hands into the other Wildcats, and that's your best strategy. Cairns did it in the semi-final, where Cotton had games where he scored less than 10 points, and you have to play out of rotations, and you have to test guys like Steindl, who played well, Mitch Norton, who fouled out and didn't score, I don't think. Kevin White, who you know, choked down the stretch. And Jesse Wagstaff, who shot 1 of 7. Mooney didn't quite have the game. I couldn't quite work that out. If you got a theory, get at me on Twitter. But yeah, test those guys. I'd rather test those guys than let Bryce Cotton shoot on me or try and get flirty off pick and rolls and hedge or ice or whatever. It's not going to work against Bryce Cotton. You got to throw crazy doubles at him. So they did that. Bryce Cotton shouldn't have deferred to Kevin White there. Yes, he was wide open. Yes, it's the percentage shot, but Brisbane came off him because they wanted him to shoot it. We all knew he wasn't going to make that shot. That's not what Kevin White is in the league for. I thought it played into Brisbane's hands, and therefore that's not the percentage play you wanted. He could have gone at the rack. I mean, if that was someone, Mitch Norton had fouled out. That is the asterisk to all this and the sort of the footnote to this play. But still, I just would have preferred to see Cotton be really aggressive out of that double team and take him on. I don't know. Call me crazy. I just never saw that shot from Kevin White going down. That was Brisbane, though. That was their plan. That was their strategy. Big win from them coming back from 18 down. Holy moly. Lamanis was were funny in this one. You know, in the timeouts, cursing and passionate. And then you get him on camera and he's as slow as molasses. He's like a press vampire. You know, he just sucks the life out of the telecast. Anywho, moving on. Well, we've talked about one game. Let's talk about another. Melbourne and Perth. This is last round. Melbourne won this one in Perth. Golding had the 20-plus points. But I said a couple of things I want to bring up about it. I think Perth are going to win the championship. Very confident in that. Willing to put down, willing to tag any bet. Any bet out there. Get in my DMs. I'm a man of my word. Whatever bet I make, I'll pay up. But I expect people to do the same. And if you don't, I'll come and find you. But, you know, in that game, Golding had 20-plus points, and he's only done that 6 times this season, and Melbourne have gone 4 wins, 2 losses in those 6 games. So in a total of, at that time, 23 games, he had a 20-plus point game. He's done that 6 times. That's 26% of the time. So think about it, if they're in a 5-game series, doesn't help him. It's only the second time he's had 4-plus three-pointers against a top-4 team this season, but, gee, he's been shooting the ball well, but can he do it against the same team that's a good team in a 5-game series? Because he's critical for them. Because they decided to save some money and not get a second import, he's the guy who's got to score 20 points, and there's no excuse not to. He's a good enough player to. It's just whether he can do it at his age. Magne only played the 12 minutes, looked much better against Brisbane, had a couple of nice dunks. Looking at the positives for United definitely have a handy list of defenders they can throw at Bryce Cotton. Barber, McDaniel, McCarron. But I don't think his outside shooting slump, and by his I mean Bryce Cotton's, was isolated to this game. It's not something that Melbourne did. His shooting slump of late has come against the last 6 teams before it. So it's more on Cotton than it is attributed to United. Again, continuing to play the other side of the coin, McCarron is better than Norton. Andrew and I spoke, I think, last episode about where do United have the advantage on the floor, and it's in that McCarron matchup and Norton, I think, anyway. McCarron controlled the play well, kept the turnovers low, 12-12, so, you know, very seldom that a team plays to an even in turnovers with the Wildcats. Landau is a long four. And Barber is super dynamic. I see them as Golding, McCarron, Barber, and Landau. I see them as that team. That's kind of the best punch they've got. Those guys are going to play really well and be the big story coming out of the finals, even when it happens. I've got here Steindl is struggling big time. He kind of came out of that slump. But also, Landau looked a little bit long and lanky for Mooney. Whether Magne helps with that when he's healthy and playing more is a question going forward. We'll come back to Mason's question. Adam Ford, gone. I think, like a lot of people, pretty shocked. Firstly, he's done a good job. Secondly, it's such a bad sports market to be testing the water. I don't think this is a result of... People say, oh, it's because they wanted him to take a step back to the assistant coaching job. I don't buy that. I don't think you could look at his season and go, there's an assistant coach, and expect to keep him. I think that's outrageous. I don't buy that. But if it's... He must be pretty fed up with the Kings if he's willing to leave his first head coaching job in the middle of COVID as the guts has been cut out of this sport. I mean, there were only a couple of hundred people at the Brisbane Bullets game by the look of it. You know, are they going to be splashing out on a new coach when Lemanis goes? They had 1,000 people at that game. There was more people at my local bakery, for heaven's sake. So, you know, risky move from Ford. I've heard this move was at his instigation, and what it had to do was the had to do with the fact that his rotational substitution patterns, he's being beholden to them by the health staff. If this was a, and I've heard that from a couple of people in and around the sport, some credible, some not so credible, but I've heard that Ford was getting annoyed with being told what to do as regards to rotations and health of players and medical and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, in the press release, which was, you know, curt and cryptic, typically, it stated, you know, personal reasons, moving back with the family. And I don't buy that either because if it had been under those sort of more, how do you put it, you know, family reasons, you would have seen Bogut, Paul Smith and others, they love the Twitter, come out and say, love Adam Ford, it's been great for the club, we didn't want him to go, but we understand family comes first. They've been awfully quiet on the issue. And they're, if you haven't noticed out there, they're not quiet on any issue. And for them not to have come out, I just think, you know, and typically they're very pious, oh, bushfire relief, and they're very charitable. Actually, pious is not the word, they're very charitable. But then to not to do it for one of their own, I find that very peculiar. I'd say Shane Heal wants this job. That would certainly fall in line with Paul Smith's insatiable appetite for enlisting past players to be his friend. Bogut, Longley, Lish, Shane Heal, who's with the Flames. It'd be very easy for him to make that jump over from the women's team to the men's team and get someone to fill his spot there. To sort of play the other side with Adam Ford, good coach, did well, lots of injuries, we've all heard that, but he does have Casper Ware on his team. Casper Ware is a brilliant winning player in the NBL and maybe any league you went to. He doesn't need a lot of coaching. Think about all the shots that team has been through and how much times players have missed, and Ware hasn't missed a minute. He hasn't missed a game. He hasn't missed a minute. Everyone's banged up. Everyone's hurt, but he just plays through it. You get what you pay for with him. He's a true pro and a point guard. And you know, he's signed up. He'll be at the TBT. I don't know how he's going to get out of the country, but he's signed up. He wants to do it. He's a bulldog. That team's success over the past 2 years has been on Casper Ware. Not Andrew Bogut, not Adam Ford, not Will Weaver. It's the guy in sneakers and shorts who actually contributes most. I'm not saying those guys don't contribute at all, but they're the ones that contribute most, especially a star player like him. Even when he shoots bad, he controls the game. He's the conductor. You don't have to look very far or very intently to see that out of Sydney. Speaking of Casper Ware, import guards, they still rule the NBL. And United are flying in the face of that and seemingly doing quite well, but we'll see how it all goes in the end. But look at these import point guards. And before people go, oh, point guard, Cotton's not a point guard, if you could write down everything you're about to say, put it in an envelope and mail it to about 1965 when someone might have cared. Point guard studs imports in the NBL. Harvey, he's the only scorer in Illawarra. He scored 3/4 of his team's score the other day. No one else in that team can buy a bucket. Kiefer Sykes, that Southeast Melbourne team is now legit 3-4 on the table because of him. And had a great game against Melbourne. I'm not sure how intent they were on winning, but nonetheless, I think they want top spot. I don't think they rolled over. Cotton, obviously. Casper Ware, obviously. Scott Machado is a good player. They have failed for other reasons. All those locals failing to step up, much like we saw in the Brisbane Perth game from the Wildcast, as I put them. You know, and I think while Machado hasn't had a winning season, there's always an exception to the rule. I think that's the first rule of chemistry or physics. I forget. Let's jump on now to a question. And Mason has sent something in, an audio recording. So I'll go ahead and play it now.
Hey, what's up, Joe and Andrew? It's your friend Mason here from the Cool Cats Corner. Loving your work, and let's go Wildcats. Sorry, had to get that one in. But my question for you guys is off the back of this. The NBL had a rise in the late 80s and early 90s off the back of Michael Jordan. Jordan even being one of the most favoured athletes of Australian school kids in that era. 30 years down the track and there's another massive superstar in the world of basketball who Australian school kids love, and that's LaMelo Ball. So my question to you is, how can the NBL continue to leverage itself domestically off LaMelo's rise to NBA stardom? So essentially what I'm asking is, how can the NBL continue to maximize LaMelo's popularity in the long term? Thanks so much for answering this, guys, and keep cracking at it. Thank you very much.
Now, Andrew couldn't be here today, but he has recorded a reply, and I'll play that for you all now.
Hi, everybody. It's Andrew here. I wasn't able to be with Joe for the recording session today, which is eating me up inside. It's just killing me. But I had to do a special emergency recording here because after weeks and weeks of asking, we got a question from our listeners sent in with an audio track. So you've probably already heard it played. Joe's probably done the great post-production. So I'll just say thanks, Mason, for your question. Excellent question, I thought. And not necessarily an easy one to answer, but I'll give it my best crack. So I think the difference with Michael Jordan was that he was part of the global zeitgeist. Everybody knew Michael Jordan. It didn't matter how old you were, what walk of life you came from, you knew who Michael Jordan was. I'm not sure somebody like LaMelo Ball has that same impact at a societal level. He's known to a subset of people, as you mentioned, young kids probably, basically, you know, who are into the Instagram, TikTok world of LaMelo Ball. And I would go so far as to say LaMelo's style would probably actually put some people off him and basketball. Whereas MJ back in the day, everybody loved him. You know, he was a golden boy. A girl could have brought him home as the boyfriend for dinner, and like mum, dad, grandma, everybody would have loved Michael Jordan. Couldn't go wrong. I'm not sure LaMelo has that same impact. Now, I was a school kid in the MJ era, so I was probably just as much impacted by him as anybody else. Certainly, I know when I was playing basketball in the neighborhoods, there were lots of kids with their tongues stuck out trying to make ridiculous layups. So anyway, to your question, how can the NBL leverage LaMelo? Well, I think they're doing the best they can in a sense, because I would start with going where the kids are. So what's that? Social media, TikTok, Instagram. So they're already doing that. They do continue to link and reference LaMelo. You know, the guy can't pick his nose without it being tweeted by the NBL. So look, they're doing that bit. They're trying to you know, get that halo effect of being tied into him. You got to remember though as well, as much as we talk about LaMelo, he only played 13 games. It was a whistle-stop tour, man. Like, he wasn't around for long. So I think what you'll find is that LaMelo connection, as he moves on, his linkages with the NBL from his perspective will fade pretty damn quick. So I'm not sure he'll want to keep talking about the NBL and being linked to it. He would rather be linked to, you know, the NBA and Kardashians, I think. So I think what the NBL need to do, they need to leverage the pipeline. They need this continual flow of next stars that legitimizes the league rather than being like sort of an embarrassment league that's, you know, gets teased about by not being the NBA, sort of being a Fisher-Price NBA. You don't want that. So sure, what you want to do is promote the pathway, you know, so promote the guys that have already been there, done that, and are in the NBA, Torrey Craig, Joe Ingles, LaMelo, but you've got to find a new dude every year. So I think, you know, this year we've got Cam Oliver now throwing a few dunks down. You see what they're doing with him. He's on every mention of an NBL broadcast. It's Cam Oliver now. Next year we might have Justin Ian Jessup. We're definitely going to get some Josh Giddey, and maybe we'll get a John Mooney. So I think that's what they're going to have to do. Every year, it's about a new crop of players, not just LaMelo. As good as he is, I don't think he's going to bring everybody together in the way that MJ once did. Mason, awesome question. I hope I haven't rattled on too long about this. But look, yeah, really appreciate it. Everybody else, fire in your questions. Sorry I can't be there. There's so much to talk about. Adam Ford. You know, what's going on? We've got the Indigenous round. Some of those uniforms look awesome. Yeah, really missing not having a chance to chat to Joe about it. But I'll listen, and maybe we get some more of those ASMR Joe sounds this week. Until then, ciao.
So I actually haven't, at the time of recording, I actually haven't heard Andrew's response, but I'm going to say it was great. You people listen, you make up your own minds, you're smart now. Here's my response to Mason's question, which I did listen to. I think, you know, comparing Jordan as a player and a commercial entity to Ball or anyone else is risky. I mean, Sam Smith's follow-on book was entitled There Is No Next, and I think that's a pretty apt title, not just because of his talent, but, you know, the timing of the year it was and how the world was constructed. But to take Mason's question at it, I sort of comprehended it to mean how to drive people to consume the NBL product off the strength of Ball's brand and popularity. And I guess my answer to Mason would be just as an influencer, you know, and you got to stop. I think people have to stop looking at the NBL or basketball as some sort of government sanctioned arts because it's in the Olympics, it's worth more. The NBL is a business like any other bakery, auto shop, sex shop, Emporium, doesn't matter. They're all the same and they're all selling a product. And I look at him as an influencer. He has 6.7 million followers on Instagram. And I guess the answer is build a rapport. I hope they've built a rapport with him over his season here to get him to say nice things about the league. If just 1% of his following interact and buy merchandise or tickets, that's 67,000 people. There were, I think, how many were at the Melbourne game? 67,000 people. That's 1% of his following. There were 3,500 at the Southeast Melbourne game in a stadium with a capacity of 10,500. So it's six times that arena when they can only fill a third of it. So that's what I'd say. If you have a stock in a business and you can get 67,000 people to invest in it, even a small amount, you're doing pretty damn well. Here's a more tangible answer. A lot of clubs internationally open it up so their team can be bought by fans. They can take a minority ownership stake, which is essentially a donation because you don't get anything from it. It's the equivalent of, say, buying a star. You get to name it, NBL Pocket, Podcast Land or whatever. And in the event that travel is made there, maybe you own it, I don't even know. But maybe fans are interested in that. And if he's got that many fans, maybe they'd be interested in it. Because I fail to see the quantum leap where someone would go, oh, I like watching LaMelo Ball play in the NBA. So I'll go and follow and spend money on the team that he used to play for 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago that he doesn't talk about, doesn't know, doesn't interact with, doesn't play for. I find that I don't know how you do that. And I think looking at LaMelo Ball, you're really talking about next stars. And I think the answer is in the title. They're called next stars. So the answer is, who's next? Giddy's been next. He was a good one. I feel like COVID has really derailed where this Next Stars program was going. I think Giddy has propped it up to a sort of superficial level. I think he's got a really good cachet in Australia. But, you know, what about who's the next one who's not a LaMelo Ball? You know, where does it go from there? So the NBL's got a really tough job to work out, you know, who is next. Really tough job. But in answering Mason's greater question of what do you do about the commercialization of the league, Brad and Botty podcast had Brian Keel on on their latest, and I think more than looking at the game and players and this and that, I think the most important thing is looking at what made it or was growing it popular in those days. You can't, before you talk about characters like LaMelo Ball or Didi Luzada or Josh Giddey, guys like Brian Keel, Bob Turner, Mike Wroblewski, Cal Bruton, Ken Cole. Great players, some of them, but some of them are just administrators. What they all are is charismatic salesmen and unique characters. You don't have to be a LaMelo Ball to be a unique character. And those guys were all salesmen first, highly competitive second. And that's not a slight on any of them. And I think all of them would agree with me if I were to speak to them. I've spoken to some of them. And they were all salesmen, all interested, all believed in what they were doing. They weren't collecting a paycheck. They weren't doing something to then springboard into something else, you know. They were salesmen who had boots on the ground, you know. Brian Keel was in Brisbane. Bob Turner was in Sydney. Wroblewski in Sydney. I think Bob Turner was in Sydney. Cal Bruton's in Perth and Geelong and wherever else he went. And Ken Cole was in Adelaide. Boots on the ground. You know, you're just as likely to buy from those guys I've mentioned a basketball ticket as you are a set of steak knives. And that's, I think, not to discredit anyone working in the NBL now, but I think that's what's lacking. Those real salesman types of under-promise, over-deliver, set a good price point, look at where you are, look at your competition, work amongst each other. I don't think there's that cooperation. Because, you know, basketball, here's how I put it. Basketball and most sports, at a junior level, they're a sport. There's something egalitarian about it. There's something policy about it. It's more of a, I don't know what I'm saying, but it's at that level, a junior level, it's a sport. Once you get professional and players start getting paid and it's about the bottom line, it's entertainment first and foremost, and maybe only. It is an entertainment product. Stop thinking that these players are doing this great. So they're all paid. They're all doing the job. They're all, you know, it's about making money. And I think if people approached it with that spirit, you'd get somewhere. That's my answer to Mason. Because, and one last point, I've never understood the college obsession in the USA. Often a player will be really great for their college and they'll always be tied to it. And you see it with the TBT where teams put up, you know, guys from a certain college. That relationship just seems to be almost exclusively USA. I don't know how you'd form that kind of fraternity between the LaMelo Ball and the Illawarra Hawks. And even in that interview that I read a little while ago, I wish I knew the author, I wish I'd give them the credit, but he even said, oh, why'd you choose the Illawarra Hawks? And instead of giving a fake answer and saying, oh, I love the team, oh, I wanted to be near the beach, any answer, he just goes, well, I'd been pro before, so it was a choice between China and Australia, and, well, you know, Australia was the next best. Yeah, cool. Charismatic answer. Real salesman. Way to sell it. Take my money. No, not quite. Jumping onto something completely different. Kwame Brown. I think, although this is not NBA, I think a lot of people, NBL, I think a lot of people should be aware of this. Kwame Brown used to play in the NBA for a while, number one pick, who didn't quite pan out to that lofty standard. He's been slagging off everyone in the NBL media, not NBL, NBA media, pardon me, particularly the guys on the Up in Smoke podcast, All the Smoke podcast, I want to say. Yeah. And what it really got me thinking about this podcast that I do here, because, you know, I've just spent a little bit slagging off Kevin White and slagging off some of the Wildcat guys, and it's a tough balance commenting on sports. You want to be, you know, you want to say something, but you don't want to be like a punk who players would think, oh, they're just talking, and, you know, they wouldn't have the guts to say that. Anything I've said here, I'd happily say to them on the phone or to their face, I suppose. I'd probably dress it up a little bit and be a bit nicer. Actually, I probably wouldn't. You know, and I think there's this real misunderstanding in sports between disagreement and a put down. Just because you disagree on something doesn't mean it's a put down. And, you know, and I think a lot of players are very precious about being commented on. It's like, well, everyone's commented on, you know, go on Yelp, and even your person earning, you know, $12 an hour to clear tables, he's getting or she's getting rated on their performance. So certainly don't take it to heart. It's just the metric. Good and bad. But it is very difficult to find that balance between three things: being a pumper, being a dumper, being insightful, but also not appearing lightweight. I'd rather be an irritant or looked at as being a bit negative than being looked at as lightweight and saying the same old stuff. I just wouldn't want to go in for that. So if ever you listen, hate, there would be people who hate listening to the podcast. I get that. Yeah, if you got hate in your heart, let it out. And but it's hard, it's difficult striking that balance. And people on Twitter who listen to the show, you'll find it's difficult to strike that balance. You don't want to be seen to be a pious sort of cuck. That's a very, very popular word in this podcast. I want to talk about Lego Masters. Jeez, I watched the final of that thing, and I don't know why the NBL isn't filmed more like Lego Masters. That thing is filmed brilliantly with the nice cameras and those little pieces to camera that are preemptive, that stings going into quarter time. I just don't see why the quarter time interviews have to be so sterile. You know, a guy standing there, whatever. Why you wouldn't just at quarter time show clip ups from the huddles, Maybe even you pull a player while they're there on the sideline, get their little chats. I just don't know why we do that. You know, they come over, ask three questions, give cliched, generic, thoughtless answers, and we go back to it. Whereas Lego Masters, you know, something will happen. Let's say, oh, no, the statue's about to fall over. And they'll interview the two people beforehand. They're like, oh, I think it's going to fall over. And they sort of preempt it with the interview and then go into it. I don't know why the NBL couldn't kind of film moments with players where they're sitting there talking about what might happen and kind of chime them in together. It's probably a little far-fetched, but I just want to plant that seed in people's mind. Also, the fact we talked about characters. Mason's question, LaMelo Ball, and then those other guys I mentioned, Curl, Turner, Rebluski, Bruton, Cole. Who is the brick man of the NBL? I mean, that guy, when they gave out the winner, he was weeping. He often weeps at the end of the show. It hits you home. My advice to everyone is find your brick man. You know, that guy bleeds on screen. Bleeds on screen. And you got to do the same. Well, I think we're at about half an hour. I think you've got your money's worth, which is to say nothing. Thank you for listening. Andrew will be back next week, I'm hoping. It's been very difficult with the schedules the way they are, but we're getting somewhere. Gee, I'll be looking at the attendance of that Perth Brisbane game at the Armory Nissan Arena. Boy, oh boy, that looked to be in the hundreds. I really hope it's not. Tough going, but I enjoyed that one. I really enjoyed that game. I really like Sobey and Drimmick. They are tough and gutsy. They're the soul of that team, and it's good to see Patterson rediscover some form and use his newfound shape. He's a big player. Why would you not send a double team? Anyway, especially when he got 2 feet in the paint. Come on, think about it. Come on, Trevor Gleeson, you're better than that. All right, everyone, thanks very much for listening. A reminder, if you're going to buy a book, use the link Booktopia. Send some money my way. But more importantly, if you're going to buy a book, buy the book, the only book you need to buy, which is Marvelous, the Brett Maher story. I've got one copy left. Signed, mint condition. Patreon, yeah. If you like the show, become a Patreon supporter. It's really a charity, but it would be much appreciated, I'll tell you that much. And what else? Twitter, NBL Pocket Pod. I think this thing's also on Facebook and Instagram, but I never put anything up there, so you'd have to be a true fan to want to like it on there, because you really get nothing for your money. But you know, if you're sitting on the toilet and you got nothing better to do, why not? Why not add me? Andrew will be back, hoping to do some episodes with bodies. Everyone liked that, tough questions for body. We'll do that. Probably going to do it before the finals. I think we're all just... it's a hibernation right now. A couple of the games are really dragging out. Thanks very much, everyone, and I will see you next week.